Funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How would you cope if it hurt to do things as simple as walking, cooking dinner, even using a pen or a computer keyboard? More than 3.9 million Texans suffer from various forms of arthritis, which can range in severity from mild discomfort to disabling pain and loss of function. The disease is certainly a growing concern as our elderly population increases, but as my guest today will tell us, it's a myth that arthritis is a problem only for seniors, when in fact young adults can experience their first symptoms in the prime of their lives, and 25,000 Texas children are affected by the chronic pain and inflammation of arthritic joints. Dr. Stanley Cohen is clinical professor in the Department of Internal Medicine at UT Southwestern Medical Center, in private practice at Rheumatology Associates Dallas, co-director of the Division of Rheumatology at Presbyterian Dallas, and co-medical director of Metroplex Clinical Research Center. Ann Palmer is CEO of the Arthritis Foundation. Welcome both of you to Think.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Many people may not be aware that arthritis is actually an umbrella term. Can you talk about the symptoms that are common to all or most forms of it?
So arthritis is a number of different diseases, but generally we think of arthritis when people have painful joints. They have joint stiffness that may last just for a few minutes with the classical osteoarthritis, which is the most common type of arthritis that we get as we age, or it can last for several hours with inflammatory arthritis like rheumatoid arthritis. We're very concerned when patients have swollen joints. And so we tell our patients, if you have a persistent, swollen, or painful joint that lasts more than 7 days, consult your healthcare professional. So arthritis makes up many different things, from all the way from gout to rheumatoid arthritis to lupus. There are many different forms of arthritis.
So that certainly presents challenges when you're trying to serve such a diverse community of people with a diverse collection of challenges, Ann.
Absolutely. And we certainly want to see ourselves as the home for all people with arthritis. Certainly a commonality is pain. And so that's the language that people with arthritis talk about. But we have a variety of services and approaches to meeting the diverse needs. And needs of an individual can change from week to week. It's very complicated disease and very complicated to meet the needs of such a diverse group of people.
And chronic pain really is one of those things that can absolutely change a life. People who haven't experienced it maybe don't understand how all-encompassing it can be. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think that's, as I said, it's the common, it's the umbrella to arthritis. But if you live in pain every day, it zaps your energy, your strength. You can be tired. It prevents people sometimes from really participating in their life. And it can be in a minor way or a big way in terms of disability and not even being able to work. But I don't think people understand. It's usually silent. People don't talk about it very much. So pain is it's really a very significant issue for people and really is limiting to them in terms of their daily activity.
So when a patient comes to you, Dr. Cohen, is the first thing you want to do after diagnosis to start to understand the best way to tackle that pain?
No, absolutely. I mean, so just following up on what Ann said, I mean, having chronic pain or acute development of chronic pain is a lifestyle changer. These are people who are joggers, golfers, tennis players, and all of a sudden, when like a disease like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis or psoriatic arthritis are debilitated by their pain, can't function, can't work. And so we try to address the cause of the arthritis, what's causing the pain, what's causing the inflammation, and depending on what's doing that, we'll tailor our therapies for that. And certainly in the short term, we want to provide them pain management until we get their disease process under control.
For the autoimmune forms of arthritis, do we understand at all why in some people the body starts to attack itself?
Well, we know a great deal about what happens once the disease starts, but we don't know a great deal about the trigger, why it suddenly occurs, why the body turns on itself. So by understanding what goes on once the disease starts, we're able to manage the large majority of those patients very effectively. But we've struggled with all of our research to really come up with what is the inciting event. And we think it's probably a relationship between background genetics of a patient and environmental factors, whether it be viral infection or whether it be something from the Industrial Revolution, change in our environment.
Mm-hmm. Does the disease always get worse once people have initial symptoms? Do different forms of arthritis always get worse?
Well, one thing we should say, there's certain forms of arthritis we call acute arthritis that may last 2 or 3 or 4 weeks are generally viral and may resolve on their own. But the majority of the arthritises that are chronic, they will get worse if you do not seek treatment. Mm-hmm. But with intervention and proper medical treatment, we can manage the large majority of these very effectively, much better than we used to. When I started my career in 1979, we had a very limited armamentarium of medications. Now we have a number of wonderful therapies that can basically, many times, get the patient back to normal life.
I was surfing around online, and of course there are recommended medical therapies. A lot of people, as you know, and want to not use as little medication as possible. Mm-hmm. It seems like there might be a lot of snake oil salesmen out there. Are there good ways for people good resources for people to know the difference?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question, and we wrestle with that. We consider ourselves really the trusted source, and we try to provide information about those that, you know, are really can help and those that don't. But, you know, also to a certain extent, though, I mean, if it helps you, that's, you know, that's one thing. It's a very challenging thing to provide that kind of information, but there are good sources of information, our website, your own physician. So I think that an exercise, I mean, a really safe way to deal with arthritis pain is safe exercise. You need to be careful about that, too, in terms of choosing exercise that's tailored to your specific, but often exercises, and particularly with chronic pain, you can have issues with depression, and exercise certainly helps with those things, too. So there are a lot of natural ways to approach disease management and pain without having to take medication until it's, you know, a very severe issue.
But you're exactly right. We see a lot of patients who, for whatever reason, do not want to do conventional medicine. Mm-hmm. And they spend a lot of time on the internet, and there is a lot of quackery mm-hmm. out there. There's billions of dollars spent on nutraceuticals mm-hmm. and homeopathic regimens that do not work and have, when they are evaluated scientifically, are not effective. My approach is to have the patients, if they want to try that, discuss it with mm-hmm. me. And I certainly try to push them in the direction of conventional care along with the homeopathic regimen. But Anne is exactly right. The Arthritis Foundation is a resource for someone to call and query, is this something that is reasonable for me to do or not? But there's a tremendous amount of misinformation. Mm-hmm. So we do try to guide our patients to the proper websites, the Foundation's website, the American College of Rheumatology, places like Mayo Clinic, Johns Hopkins, where you really can get good educational information, even WebMD, rather than pursuing what you read on the web by one or two people in testimonials or a blog.
Especially if it's very expensive and appears to be a miracle cure, you're probably in a bad place.
That's correct.
All right, let's talk briefly about juvenile arthritis. How does this differ from the adult forms, and what's the prognosis for a child who's diagnosed early in life?
Well, there are different forms of juvenile inflammatory arthritis. I'm an adult rheumatologist, but there are different forms, and some of them are self-limiting. Some of them, however, can continue on to adulthood. And so it depends on the particular type of juvenile inflammatory arthritis that you have and what your prognosis will be. We're blessed in Dallas in that we have a Scottish Rite Hospital with phenomenal pediatric rheumatologists who manage juvenile inflammatory arthritis. And if you have a young child who has juvenile inflammatory arthritis, that's where you need to be. And they will provide you the best care, and generally the prognosis for the majority of those patients is good. And again, that's also related to the therapies which have been developed over the last 20 years, which have revolutionized the treatment of adult rheumatoid arthritis, but also revolutionized the treatment of juvenile rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah, we just celebrated, this maybe not the right word, 30 years of our JA conference. And as we look back 30 years ago, most of those children would have been in wheelchairs. And still this year there were a few, but it, you know, the sea has changed in terms of treatments. It doesn't mean that it's still not a very difficult disease to live with, and there are about 300,000 children that do.
I want to go back to what you were saying, Anne, about the value of exercise, because for some people, when something is hurting, it might sound counterintuitive that the best thing to do is to get out there and move that joint. How do you find your way to effective and safe forms of exercise?
Well, that's a really good question. We offer some programs ourselves, and we also give you some guidelines on our website about choosing safe options for exercise. You certainly need to let your trainer, your exercise program, know that you have a joint-specific issue. But there are safe and effective forms of exercise. We offer some Walk With Ease and others that are, you know, designed for people with arthritis. And in fact, we're pioneers in showing people that they could exercise, in fact, and that is a healthy thing to do. But it does seem counterintuitive. But you have to be careful. You have to make sure that you're not exercising the wrong way.
So how does it happen that so many times lifelong athletes at the end of their careers have some arthritic problems?
Well, when you have an injury as a younger person, for example, someone who has a meniscal tear in high school, a football player, anytime there's a change in the normal anatomy of the joint, you will prematurely develop arthritis, osteoarthritis. The forces across the joint are shifted, so the cartilage has more pressure going across at certain points. So any type of previous injury or repetitive injury can result in premature development of osteoarthritis. And that's why you see so many NFL football players, basketball players having knee replacements and hip replacements and so forth from the trauma that they sustained during their career.
There's a lot of information about that, though, that parents who have young children, that their coaches should know about, you know, how quickly they go back to play and how they warm up. So there's a lot of information that is available to impact some of those things so that it doesn't have to impact quite as much as it does. But it's really due to injuries, as Dr. Cohen said. But there is some really good information about after a tear what to do and how to get back into sports.
So contact sports aside, are there ways when we are healthy and strong to exercise and thereby maybe prevent the possibility of the development of osteoarthritis?
So there are studies that have shown if you're anatomically normal, you can weight bear exercise all you want to. But if you have flat feet, very high arch, if you're bow-legged or knock-kneed, you know, those things are risk factors for weight bearing, running, jogging, and so forth. As a rheumatologist, I'm not a real fan of jogging and those types of exercises. We love swimming. Mm-hmm. We love biking. We love the elliptical, non-weight-bearing exercises. Yes, so the answer to your question, can you keep your muscles strong and tight and stretched properly and potentially delay or slow down the development of osteoarthritis? The answer is yes. And again, I just think it's being prudent about the type of aerobics fitness that you choose. And again, we're biased against weight-bearing exercises in general because of the stresses it puts across the joints. But there is good research data. If you're anatomically normal and don't have a torn meniscus or something of that nature, running and that type of thing is not going to bring on the development of osteoarthritis.
But weight control is another good way to prevent. So, you know, if good weight management doesn't put as much strain on your joints, and so it is, you know, something for people to think about as well.
You probably know this figure offhand. I had it in my notes, but something like the loss of just a few pounds can mean the loss. In other words, you're putting a great deal less, pressure on your joints every time you take a step.
Yeah, I think it's 1 in 4 every mm-hmm. pound you lose. It's 4 times less pressure on your knees, so it's a significant statistic to understand that weight can really does put pressure on your joints.
Well, in daily practice, the issue of obesity is just so obvious, and we know that Texas has got a real problem with obesity, and we've seen many patients who've lost weight who've improved. There's no question about it. And we're always confused when we see someone coming who is morbidly obese and has lower extremity pain and wants us to do something for them. And our first response is there's nothing really you can do until you lose weight. But it certainly has been shown to make a big difference in reducing the discomfort.
We're speaking this hour with rheumatologist Dr. Stanley Cohen, a clinical professor in the Department of Internal Medicine at UT Southwestern Medical School, and Ann Palmer, who is CEO of the Arthritis Foundation. We're talking about living with arthritis. If you have a question, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet @ChrisBoydThink.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies programs. Accepting applications for summer and fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in human rights, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour about living with arthritis with Ann Palmer, who is CEO of the Arthritis Foundation, and Dr. Stanley Cohen, a rheumatologist who's clinical professor in the Department of Internal Medicine at UT Southwestern Medical School. You can join this conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. And I have to imagine people who suffer from the chronic pain of something like arthritis miss a lot of work, spend a lot of time and money at the doctor. What is the economic toll of this disease?
Yeah, it's the number one cause of disability in this country, and it's estimated that it costs the economy $128 billion a year. So it's a huge cost factor, and some of the treatments that Dr. Cohen has talked about are very expensive. And, of course, as we're looking at the healthcare issues now, you know, the cost of these, it's become very controversial and very much of a challenge for a lot of people with arthritis to deal with, to be able to stay on their medications. And, of course, at work, depending on the nature of work, there's time away from work, and it's a very expensive disease in this country, and I don't think that we really realize that when we think about arthritis.
And certainly, I would imagine some sorts of jobs are easier to live with when you're in a lot of pain than others.
Others, correct. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we now talk about that sitting is the new smoking. Yeah. So, you know, there's the whole issue of, you know, we think of maybe there's more disability in blue collar or you know, heavy lifting or those kinds of, but as it turns out, that may not be the case, or there may be other issues that come from not exercising or not getting up and moving around.
Dr. Cohen, do you find that patients with osteoarthritis tend to wait until they simply can't stand it anymore before they seek the care of a rheumatologist?
Well, I think that's generally true. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when you ask people what their primary problem is, it's always pain, mm-hmm. and when the pain gets to a certain point, they'll seek help. And again, I think there's a lot that we can do for them once they get there. But again, you know, just like anyone, people want to deny that they have a problem and delay. But certainly we can help them if they'll show.
Generally speaking, when does surgery become a viable option?
So surgery is an option when the pain is not managed with just conventional therapy. So with osteoarthritis, with anti-inflammatories, you know, the ibuprofens, the naproxens of the world, acetaminophen, Tylenol, or analgesics, stronger pain medication, weight reduction, exercise. If you still have significant joint pain at that point, it's time to see the orthopedist. And so one of the greatest advances in the management of arthritis in the last 60 years has been joint replacement. Mm-hmm. And there are, you know, probably close to a million different types of joint replacements done in this country every year. If you look at hip, knees, shoulders, now ankles, and they're incredibly effective and giving people their life back, and now the persistence of benefit goes on for years and years and years. We used to worry about them breaking apart and loosening and so forth, and that can occur rarely, but not like it used to. The technology is so much better. So once a patient has failed conventional therapy, conservative therapy, and they're still having pain and it's impacting their function, their daily function, daily activities, it's time to see the orthopedist for an opinion for surgical intervention.
Your point earlier about, you know, for people who are significantly overweight, the first and best thing they need to do is get that weight down to normal was well taken. For people who find it impossible to reduce weight, what do you, you know, reluctantly prescribe for them?
Well, we'll, you know, prescribe medications for their discomfort. We'll also push them into various weight loss programs. So we'll, you know, have them speak to experts in weight loss and whether it's caloric restriction all the way to bariatric surgery, mm-hmm. you know, which is certainly another option if they're morbidly obese. So, again, with those folks, even though they are obese, it makes it a much more difficult job for us and less likely that they're going to have the improvement we'd like them to have. But we can do things for them to improve their quality of life.
Are you seeing – I know that you don't treat children specifically, but are you seeing younger folks who, by virtue of their weight, are experiencing osteoarthritis than you did in the past?
Yeah, I think we're seeing more people in their 30s and their late 20s, even in their 40s, who have been obese all their life. You ask them, have you always been this big? Yes, I've always been this big since I was a teenager. And I think that it does prematurely lead to the development of joint wear and tear and osteoarthritis.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also email think@kera.org. Let's go on the phone now to Sarah in Dallas. Hi, Sarah.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
I have a question for the doctors, and this is regarding gout. I'm a 59-year-old African-American woman, retired from the military, and I was diagnosed. I have been diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. However, in the past year, I started having gout in just my left big toe. And so I was looking for an alternative medication or something besides pills to take. And I went to Whole Foods, and they said cherry extract is really good for gout.
Well, let's see what we can find out for you, Sarah. Thank you for your question.
Well, actually, there is some data that cherry extract might lower uric acid, which is the cause of gout. So when people have too much uric acid in their body, which is the end product of our cells, as our cells are broken down, that can accumulate in the joints and cause acute gouty attacks. So there is some data, actually, that cherry extract can lower uric acid levels. There's also some data that drinking milk can also lower uric acid levels. Having said that, if you decide to come around to medications and you are having recurrent gout attacks, which is an indication for putting you on medication, we have wonderful medications, one of which is allopurinol, another which is Euloric Febuxostat, and they can lower the uric acid levels quite low and prevent gout attacks. Gout is a curable problem. So if the homeopathic route is okay, if you can take care of your problem with cherry extract or drinking more milk, if not, suggest you see a healthcare professional and consider medications that can lower your uric acid.
Do we know why women are more often affected by rheumatoid arthritis than men?
No, we don't know why that occurs. There has been some work more in lupus than rheumatoid arthritis looking at the hormone profile. Mm-hmm. And we do know that postmenopause, the frequency of rheumatoid arthritis is same for men and women. Hmm. So hormones must play a role during that period of time, but we don't really have a good understanding of what the actual pathogenesis is.
Yeah, you hear a lot of stories about women who are in their mid-30s and they have a child and wake up one day and just are, you know, can't lift their child because they have rheumatoid arthritis. So it does seem that there is some hormonal, but it's not documented yet.
The other interesting phenomenon is that a lot of rheumatoid arthritis patients, when they become pregnant, their disease goes into remission. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of food for thought there. A lot of research is mm-hmm. directed towards that, trying to figure out what happens while the female is pregnant that might lead the disease to go dormant for a period of time. It tends to come back after the pregnancy.
That's a tantalizing road to go down. Oh, you can't keep people pregnant forever.
Right. But hopefully we can figure out what exactly is going on between the fetus and the mother that's leading to downregulation in the immune system.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone to Bill in Fort Worth. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Pleased to hear your program. I'm 72 years old. I've got less than a 25 BMI. I've always been in shape. I always exercised. I was out walking one day, and it got dark, and I missed a step, found myself on the ground. Acute pain in my left shoulder. I toughed it out. This was December 2nd. And I toughed it out for a while. Went to a sports injury doctor. He said, you need an x-ray. Got an x-ray. Said, you have some arthritis in the joint. Nothing's broken. Went on to physical therapy. Did the exercises. And I'm still experiencing a lot of pain and like a clicking noise when I raise my arm, my left shoulder. And I get like pain down in my inner elbow. You know, it like radiates down. I'm kind of running out of conventional options and wondered if you have any ideas for me. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Well, I didn't hear if you've had an MRI, and if you're still having persistent pain despite physical therapy and just a plain x-ray, you need an MRI of your shoulder to define what is going on in the shoulder, whether you tore the rotator cuff muscles or whether you have something loose body, that clicking noise that you're having. So I would strongly encourage you to go back to your healthcare professional that you saw, let them know that your pain is not getting any better, and the next step is an MRI. As far as the pain radiating down to your elbow, that's very common with shoulder involvement. So when we tell people that if your shoulder, whether it's a bursitis or arthritis, frequently the pain will be referred down your upper arm. But you need to go back to your physician, make him or her aware that you're not doing well, and the next step would be an MRI to better define what is going on. X-rays only show the bones. They don't show the tendons. They don't show the ligaments. And that's what needs to be done.
Sounds like Bill is doing his very best to remain active despite his pain, and he's 72. How often is arthritis a factor in whether or not people are able to live independently into old age?
Well, I don't know that we have statistics specifically, but you know, we do know that it's the number one cause of disability. We do know that it is I don't want to say life limiting, but how you can participate in life.
Sure.
And for families, it can be a significant issue as parents get older and their mobility factors are harder and they have to be fear of stumbling or other things. So it is, I don't know that we have data that really talks to that, but it is certainly a factor for families and as parents grow older and they have to deal with these things.
Is arthritis associated with fall risk as people get older?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The fact that the joints don't glide as normally as they should, just a sudden turn, or the other problem a lot of folks have is getting in and out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And just that simple task is so difficult for so many folks and falling when you're doing something like that. So, no, there's no question about it. And that's why exercise is important to try to keep the muscle strong around the joints so that patients can remain independent. Or the flip side is if you have balance issues or joint issues, we want you to use a cane. It's one of the hard discussions we have, trying to get people to use a cane or a walker. But the last thing we want is the elderly or folks who are older to fall because fractures are so frequent, especially in, you know, females more than males who also have frequently soft bones as well as arthritic bones.
Yeah, and another common issue, of course, is cooking mm-hmm. because as people have arthritic pain, that they tell us that that's one of the most difficult things, opening a jar or a can, the tools that people use, knives, that sort of thing. So it can become difficult for people, not just old people, younger people as well, to be able to do the daily tasks of cooking or preparing a meal or picking up a child.
In the absence of prior injury, if you have arthritis in one joint, are you going to have it, by definition, in the opposite joint, on the opposite side of the body?
No, not necessarily. There's no question that with osteoarthritis, there are many factors involved. We've talked about obesity. We've talked about trauma. Genetics play a role.
Mm-hmm.
Osteoarthritis of the hands, which is very common. It's a strong gene, often inherited from mom or dad. But no, the course of osteoarthritis and the amount of osteoarthritis you have is extremely variable. You might have a person with one hip and nothing else, or one knee and nothing else. So it certainly doesn't mean if you have OA osteoarthritis in one joint that you're destined to have it elsewhere.
For folks whose hands are affected, there's not only the issue of pain, but there's a lot that you can't do, even if you're walking very well and getting around.
Exactly.
Are there technologies, devices that make it a little bit easier for people to cope?
Yeah, we have a whole ease of use program that is designed to qualify or, you know, help find devices that are user-friendly. Sometimes the weight of a telephone or I know that some companies are really looking at some of these remote controls and other things that will be more friendly for people with the use of their hands. But everything's difficult, you know, getting dressed, brushing your hair, cooking, opening, you know, all of those things, particularly in your hands, because there's so many things that you can't do. But there are a lot of devices. There are even drugstores have things that will help you adapt using silverware. There are lots of devices that are available. Some of them are kind of clumsy, but there are things that can help people.
I would imagine if you get a group of people in a room who have similar challenges or limitations, a lot of good ideas fly around for sort of getting through the day.
Well, I think that's really an important piece that people often feel alone. They think they're the only one, particularly if a parent with a child or a young mother. And so a lot of what the Arthritis Foundation offers is a place to come and get information, but talk to people and realize that they're not alone, and to share tips and ideas. And that's the best medicine in a lot of ways. The second piece of good medicine is you get some help, and then you get involved yourself and you begin to give back or say that I'm going to advocate or participate or educate other people. And that's part of healing, is you're not a victim anymore. You're doing something about helping yourself.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Katya in Fort Worth. Hi, Katya.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My mother has rheumatoid arthritis. It was just discovered a few months ago. What I want to know is, how can I be more proactive? What kind of alternative medicine can I give her, or nutrition-wise, what kind of vitamins or over-the-counter medicines can she take for rheumatoid arthritis? She was started on methotrexate maybe a couple of weeks ago.
Thank you so much for your call.
Well, first of all, just with the methotrexate, then we'll talk about the alternative medications. Methotrexate can take as long as 8 to 12 weeks to really know if it's going to be beneficial, so don't give up on it after 2 weeks. There is very little scientific data to really support the use of vitamins or a change in diet as far as helping with inflammatory arthritis. Anything that you do, please have your mother talk with her healthcare professional about what she's doing so they're aware. There is data with fish oil from years ago that fish oil in high doses did reduce some of the inflammation. So I think your rheumatologist or primary care physician who's taking care of the patient, your mom, certainly would have no problem with that. But as far as vitamins or other types of nutritional supplements, glucosamine, there really is no data to support benefit in rheumatoid arthritis. Again, as I mentioned earlier and Anne's mentioned, we're certainly okay with alternative healthcare interventions as long as your physician is aware what you're doing and can weigh in on that.
A lot of people get relief from massage. It can be for some people. I just met with a woman this morning who told me that she'd had a massage and had 4 days of pain-free. So there are some things like that that you can do that would help as well.
We're speaking this hour about living with arthritis with Anne Palmer, who is CEO of the Arthritis Foundation, and Dr. Stanley Cohen, clinical professor in the Department of Internal Medicine at UT Southwestern Medical School. We'll resume our conversation in a minute. You can join it by sending email to think@kera.org. You can call 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies programs. Accepting applications for summer and fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in human rights, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with rheumatologist Dr. Stanley Cohen and Anne Palmer, CEO of the Arthritis Foundation. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372, and that's where we find Jeb on the line in Fort Worth. Hey, Jeb.
Hi, Chris. I like your show. I wanted to ask your guest. I think I heard him say that exercise will help pain to go away, arthritic pain to go away, and I wanted clarification on how that works.
Well, I think that the exercise can strengthen the muscles around the joints, which will allow you to be more functional, and I think that has to be combined with reducing stress on your joints. So certainly, let's say you have arthritis of the knee, we would instruct you not to squat, not to kneel. If there are stairs there in an elevator, take the elevator. Going up and down the stairs is the wrong kind of exercise. So studies have shown that in patients who do gentle walking or swimming or bicycling, there actually is a reduction in pain with better muscle tone around the joints. I don't think we have a good explanation for the actual pathophysiology of why the pain is less, but certainly patients seem improved, whether it's the old term we used to throw out, endorphins, where the basically other humors in your body take over that are more positive. But clearly the right kind of exercise does reduce pain as well as lead to better aerobic fitness and improvement in muscle tone. But you got to avoid those things that you do that actually aggravate the joint.
Am I correct about this, that for many people arthritis pain is worse in the morning? And if that's true, why would that be the case after a night of resting?
So there is something called the GEL phenomenon, G-E-L. So when you're inactive, and one of the reasons that we think exercise helps, fluids increase in your tissues. So you haven't moved, and around your joint, fingers, knees, hips, lower back, there's more fluid in the soft tissues. So it takes a while for you to get up and massage it, move those fluids out of those tissues. So a very common phenomenon is worsening difficulty in the morning or after something called going with the knees, for example, movie knees, we call it. Mm-hmm. When you go to a movie and you try to get up after the two-hour movie, you have a hard time getting up because the joints have had this little gel effect that has occurred.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Stacy is on the line now in Richardson. Hey, Stacy.
Hi. I have MS, and I've always thought I have wrist pain that makes it hard for me to write or type. And I always thought of it as nerve pain, but the last time I saw my doctor, I know she was asking about saying it sounds to her like arthritis and asking me to describe it, and does it feel surface, that would seem to her more like arthritis, and I use Lytoderm patches, and I just wondered if you had any comment about that.
Well, we see a number of patients who actually have MS as well as our diseases. Both of them are, autoimmune diseases. The wrist pain could be arthritic. It could be related to your MS as well. It's a very difficult situation to know. And so I think if you're continuing to have discomfort and your neurologist is questioning whether the wrist pain is related to MS, I would encourage you to see a rheumatologist for an opinion. I think that would be the next step.
We have an email here from Lisa. I'm going to summarize a little bit, but essentially she says that, like a lot of people, she feels like the weather affects her experience of arthritis. Would living in a warmer climate help?
The answer is there's no question at all. The shift in the barometer does affect arthritis, and what most of my patients notice, not the day that it's raining or snowing, it's the day before.
That's right.
When it goes from a high to a low is when they hurt. We don't understand why that is. It's just sort of been an observation. People looked into it from a research standpoint, but we have not figured that out. Certainly a warmer climate with less shifts in the barometer, a more stable climate. We'd all like to live in San Diego where the weather is always the same every day. There's no question that that would help symptomatically with the joint pain.
Do you feel, Anne, in your work that that the issue of arthritis is being paid attention to by lawmakers? Like, is the lobby strong enough to get you the money you need for research?
Well, that's a great question, too. So we know that there's not as much total federal money spent on arthritis research as other diseases that affect so many people. In fact, we're working right now with the federal government to look at the DOD allocation for arthritis research because we know that it's the number one reason for disability discharge for military personnel. Mm-hmm. So we need to work on that. We've just been fighting for the funding for CDC in the arthritis division, which was reduced. So it's an important issue. There are other issues, though, that we're fighting legislatively right now, of course, and that's around, healthcare reform and, the cost of medications and the ability to see one's physician that a patient wants to. So there are many battles that are being fought now, not so much at the federal level, but at the state level, and they're almost 200 bills in state legislations right now that would affect people with arthritis. And we have a strong program of advocates, local advocates across the country, about 90,000 that we try to mobilize on specific state issues and federal issues as well. But this is an important time for legislative action. We'd love to have people volunteer with us and participate because you can fight those battles. They'll make a difference for one patient and for hundreds or thousands of patients. So it's really an important time to get involved in those kinds of issues.
I think one of the strengths of the Arthritis Foundation is their advocacy and their interaction with federal and state bodies. We're clearly underfunded. there are more patients with juvenile inflammatory arthritis than there are with cystic fibrosis or juvenile diabetes, but yet we're woefully underfunded in our research efforts. And there's no question if you're going to find a cure or lead to improvements in patient outcomes, you need basic research funding.
What's on the horizon right now? Is there anything in particular that is being researched that you're especially excited about?
Well, I think it's really we've had a great 20 years. We've developed all these new therapies, which make a huge difference. I think we're now at the point where we're trying to understand again the basic genetic protein interaction. What do the genes do that really lead to our diseases? And what are these what we call biomarkers, blood tests, that are going to allow us to finally achieve personalized medicine? Mm-hmm. Because right now our therapeutic decisions are empirical. I think there's a lot of work going on in that arena. I think we're getting more sophisticated work in the most common form of arthritis, but not the sexiest, which is just osteoarthritis. And there's a lot better basic work going on there in understanding what happens to the cartilage. So I think we'll see tremendous advances in the next 20 to 30 years.
Don't roll your eyes at me when I ask you this question, but is there any truth to the old wives' tale that popping joints can lead to arthritis in later life?
Well, there have been some studies not done very well that have suggested that that's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. So we're not encouraging you pop your joints.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Patricia in Plano. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, Chris. I have rheumatoid and psoriatic arthritis, and I also have a couple of other autoimmune disorders like APS and Sjogren's. And I was wondering, when I have new issues come up, it seems that my doctors tend to go, oh, well, that's just from your arthritis, and sort of discount it as, oh, that's just something new from your arthritis. How do you separate out or get your doctors to separate out new issues and actually investigate them to find out whether it really is from the arthritis or it's something new?
Well, that's an excellent question. It's very frustrating to us as rheumatologists. Every time we see one of our patients or a new patient with a problem, they're always told it's due to their lupus. It's due to their disease. And many times it has nothing to do with their disease. So I think that you have to grab the physician by the collar and just say, look, I don't think this is related to my disease. Prove it to me that it's related to my disease or not. And I share your frustration because we see that when one of our lupus patients gets sick, whatever it may be, they're always told it's due to their lupus. And many times it's not related at all.
Yeah, I would say that's an important issue and that we have a lot of great tools at the Arthritis Foundation to help you prepare for your doctor's visit, you know, to so that you can really challenge. You need to be your own advocate. You need to ask tough questions, and sometimes it's about preparing for that visit so that you know to ask the questions and to challenge a little bit. It's patient advocacy is important piece. We listen to our physicians. We do have evidence that shows certainly that if your physician tells you to do something, you're much more likely to do it than otherwise. But you need to be prepared for your doctor's visit. Bring them good information.
Assuming that people can afford health care, which I realize we can't necessarily assume, but for purposes of this question, Dr. Cohen, what makes a good patient for you? What do you need the patient to bring to the table in order to work together to relieve symptoms of any kind of arthritis?
Well, I think we have to have a back and forth interaction. We want to get the history. It's very important that you tell us what's going on and that you don't leave out facts that are important, mm-hmm. that have happened with other physicians that you've seen or other, you know, just not telling us because you're afraid to tell us. In that room with you, it's all confidential. It's just you and me. I want to know exactly what's going on with your health care. We want to be able to discuss the benefits and risk of any intervention that we're going to provide. We want to provide you the availability to be in touch with us. You know, in our practice, we like email better than phone because our phone system stinks. So, again, I think it's a good positive interaction between the patient and the provider. So we're happy to discuss anything with you, even if we consider it outlandish. But so that just proper communication is what we need.
We see that, you know, young, you know, 25, 26, 27-year-olds sometimes have the most issues there. They're not prepared for that. They've maybe been having their parents go with them. And, you know, the doctor will say, have you been, you know, how, what's your pain? Oh, not that bad. Or, you know, so really that, you know, preparing and giving your physician good information and really being able to talk about things, everything. If you leave things out, the doctor can't help you. So right. It's really important to prep for your visit, especially as you're transitioning to adulthood.
Let's go quickly on the phone now to Joan in Dallas. Hey, Joan.
Hi. I just have a quick question because y'all mentioned genetics. My mother had severe arthritis in her hands, and I have no idea. She's since passed. I have no idea if it was rheumatoid or osteo, and if there what the genetic risk might be for me or my siblings or, you know, so on.
Well, again, it's tough to know without knowing what they had. With rheumatoid arthritis, if you have a family member with rheumatoid, it doubles your risk of getting the disease, but the risk is really very low. So instead of 1% risk of getting it, your risk is 2%. So normal risk being 1%. With osteoarthritis, the risk is somewhat higher. So if you have involvement of your hands, I can't give you a number, but it's substantially higher. But if you're in your 50s or 60s now and you don't really have much in the way of hand involvement, you're probably not going to have significant hand involvement. Now, if you're 20, I can't promise you that won't be the case.
A number of people have written in to ask questions about, you know, concerns about taking medication on a regular basis over the course of years or decades. What thoughts should they take with them when making decisions about this?
I think that's one of the greatest reluctance for people to pursue health care is they're afraid to do that. As long as you're properly monitored by visiting the physician, whether it's two or three times a year, once or twice a year, or three to four times a year or more, and you have laboratory for certain medications that need to be monitored to monitor your kidney function, liver function, and blood count, I think the risk is close to zero as far as long-term damage. So that's really the key, which I think a lot of people don't understand. As long as you're properly monitored, the risk is very low. For example, methotrexate was mentioned earlier. I have people who have been on methotrexate for 36 years that I've treated, or the biologic drugs now for 15 years or so. As long as you're properly monitored, it should not be an issue.
But there is a risk of not going on your medications. You know, people who push it off, particularly with rheumatoid arthritis, you can have crippling. If you get damage, it's not reversible. So it's an important decision to think about avoiding taking medications because there are other risks involved if you don't.
Did Vioxx scare people away?
Oh, I think certainly that scared people away. And it also led to a marked reduction in development of new drugs for osteoarthritis. Mm-hmm. And so the good news, we're finally recovering from that, but that's been over 10 years. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole nother hour discussion.
Dr. Stanley Cohen is clinical professor in the Department of Internal Medicine at UT Southwestern Medical School, in private practice at Rheumatology Associates Dallas, co-director of the Division of Rheumatology at Presbyterian Hospital, and co-medical director of Metroplex Clinical Research Center. Amazing that you found an hour for us. Thank you very much. Ann Palmer has a shorter title, but is just as busy. She is CEO of the Arthritis Foundation. It's been a pleasure to have you both here. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer with help on the phones today from Kristen Taylor. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think and contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.